Public Media.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m., 88 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. A 40% chance of rain this afternoon, 30% chance overnight. Stay tuned. At 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We're going to start this hour by going to the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is a bonne équipe. A wonderful team of researchers, historians, interested parties who are here to talk about the New Acadia Project, the Projet Nouvelle Acadie. And you all have been in the news a lot over the past few months. The New Acadia Project is a multidisciplinary project involving archaeological, historical, and ethnographic research to find and investigate the 1765 settlements of New Acadia. And with me in the studio is Dr. Mark Rees, who is the principal investigator and archaeologist. He is a professor of anthropology here at UL Lafayette. He is with the project, has been from the beginning. Also, Dr. Michael Martin, who is a research affiliate with the project. He is also director of the Center for Louisiana Studies and a professor of history here at UL Lafayette. Alan Broussard is vice chairman of the New Acadia Project Steering Committee. And Megan Smith is a graduate assistant with the New Acadia Project. So all here to talk about this project. And you have a great Facebook page, which I would recommend to everyone. You've got some really interesting information and great photographs about this. I think many people in our audience have encountered the name through some newspaper article or on television. You all have been quite in the news. And I know that you have spent a lot of time trying to explain the whole project and also trying to both excite people and to make our expectations realistic about this project as well.
And to raise money.
And to raise money, exactly. So let's, I'm going to turn to the historian of the group first, Dr. Michael Martin, to place this group of Acadians that you are searching for, to place them in history. As I mentioned to you all earlier, for many, many years, I'm sure I had a perception of the Acadians as this group en masse who were expelled en masse by the British and just came to Louisiana all in one group. But that's not really how it happened. And so I'd like you to place this small group that we're searching for in this project, Michael, and tell us how they ended up in Louisiana.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. Well, the Acadians, when they're expelled from their homes, the first thing we need to realize is not all of them were expelled, not all of them left. Many of them were scattered throughout the British North American colonies. Some ended up in France. Some ended up in Great Britain. Some in the French Sugar Islands. But ultimately, this very small group arrives in Louisiana in the 1760s. And they're sort of the opening wedge of what would become this multi-decade and many thousand strong immigration into Louisiana. But this first group arrives in 1765, and they are moving into a territory that has just recently been taken over by the Spanish and the Spanish Empire. And the Spanish, if they were good at anything, they were good at running an efficient and a strong empire. They had learned very well how to do that, and they had very systematic ways of doing things. And one of the ways of doing things for the Spanish Empire was to grow the population and to position the population in strategic places. And so when the Acadians arrive, in the first place, they're allowed here because the Spanish government knows they need a population of a growing population. And then the Spanish government has very specific ideas as to where to put these newcomers. So some of the Acadians, not all of them, will end up on the Mississippi River. Some of them will end up eventually along Bayou Lafourche. And then some, including this very early group, will end up along Bayou Teche.
And how big is this group, this initial group?
We're talking only a couple of hundred people, maybe 200.
Very small.
200 individuals, yeah.
But quite a number of families. And maybe you can give some of the names that were in this group. And
sure, yeah. I mean, well, first and foremost, the Broussard family, which is of prime importance, not only for this project, but also for Acadian history. And not just because Alan's here.
And Mark and I.
That's right. And because we're probably all Broussards somewhere back mm-hmm. down the line. But, you know, groups like the Bergerons, groups like Hebert's, Landry's.
Martins.
And so forth.
Were there Martins in this
initial group? As far as I know, there weren't. Mm-hmm. If there were, I'm not related to them.
Okay.
Dugas.
Different Martins. Yeah. Dugas. It's if we ran through the whole list, it would be a list of names that everyone would recognize.
It would look like the telephone book.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So they were a small group, a small in number, but they had a huge impact on what we think of as Acadiana today.
Oh, sure.
So describe what happened when they finally did arrive. They arrived pretty much destitute.
That's right. They were literally at the mercy of the Spanish government. And the Spanish government had a policy of, in essence, setting people up with land, usually a land grant, sometimes tools and farm implements, weapons, everything they needed to become fully functioning members of the Spanish colonial society. And all of that is part of a way of making the Spanish empire itself successful. So they arrived with very little, but they would have had some provisions provided by the Spanish government. And then they would have been told specifically, this is where you should go.
And where did they – because we do have some documents now that tell us where they ended up going.
Right. Well, we know, and part of the reason for this project is we don't know exactly.
Exactly.
We
yes.
know. We know that they ended up along the Teche. We know that there were already French people in the area, not Acadians, and there were trading stations and so forth in the vicinity. But it would have been along what at that point was the far western boundary of Spanish-controlled Louisiana, mm-hmm. And that would have been for a couple of reasons. I mean, one was. The Spanish wanted the population in this area for protective purposes. And while you may think, well, Spanish Texas is next door, why would Spanish be worried about the Spanish? There are also American Indians and other groups that they need to they think, kind of put up a barrier against. Secondly, the Spanish were hopeful that the people that they sent here, whether they were Acadians or not, would help provide for the self-sufficiency of the colony by growing food. Eventually it was discovered that cattle was the thing that could be grown around here quite successfully.
And the Acadians had – some of them had been cattle farmers, ranchers up in Acadie.
Yes, I think mm-hmm. so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they were prime for that. So 100 and almost 200, and actually you mentioned, Mark, that there were probably some Acadians in New Orleans that they picked up along the way.
We think
that
so.
Had made
we
their way.
We have a few more okay. names, people that joined that group that was led by Joseph Broussard and other heads of families.
Mm-hmm. And I did read an interesting little note. It might have been on the Facebook page that Joseph Beausoleil Broussard was actually named the militia captain of this group that headed up to this area. So not only had he been their military leader up in Acadie, but was given that title here. Now, part of, I guess, the sad history and one of the things that makes this actually kind of interesting looking for these first camps was that of that small group, many of them died very soon after they arrived. And that seems like such a small group to begin, you know, this nation of Acadie. So they get up to this area. But at that point, history, they didn't write many accounts. We don't have many written accounts from those first Acadians, do we? Not many letters, or they weren't keeping diaries at that point.
No, there's very little archival evidence of them aside from ecclesiastical and governmental records.
And by ecclesiastical, maybe babies born where there happened to be a priest who
That's
could
right.
write that down.
Baptisms so, and deaths, marriages.
So very little evidence, and I would direct people to there's a great article that you've posted on your Facebook page that does talk a lot about some of those documents as well. So how did this project get started? You're Mark Reese. You are the principal investigator for the New Acadia Project. You knew this history, this bit of history of this small group of Acadians who were so many of us are related to arriving. What got you interested in this archaeological project that has really gained momentum?
Right. Well, it's been a long time in coming, actually. The reasons are many. It's not just archaeological. We did a field school about 11 years ago, a archaeology field school, at the Armand Broussard home site, or trying to relocate that near Lauraville. And I was aware at that time in 2003 that Armand arrived in 1765 as a child. And so it occurred to me that really the next project should be locating the initial homesteads and associated burials. We have more than 34 individuals who are recorded as being buried at locations along the Teche.
In that first year.
Right, mm-hmm. In 1765.
Place Armand Broussard for us. He was the son of?
Youngest son of Joseph Beausoleil Broussard.
Okay, so was he born here or he came as a child?
No, he came as a child, yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but long before that, it had been mentioned as a worthwhile project. In 1983, the state of Louisiana produced a document saying basically that finding the settlements of New Acadia was worthwhile and should be a major goal of future research. That was in 1983. There was talk about it. I know Warren Perrin had met with individuals. Warren Perrin is one of the members of the steering committee. And he had met and discussed it in the 1990s about starting a project like this. So I'd been thinking about it from the perspective of an archaeologist. I had prematurely named the project the Early Acadian Archaeological Project. And it occurred to me about a year ago that really if we're going to be successful, that it's going to have to be multidisciplinary. And we're going to have to really draw as broadly as we can. And so in searching for a name for the project, I was looking at the book by Carl Bresso, The Founding of New Acadia. And I thought, well, there's a simple name for this project, the New Acadia Project, and obviously involving historical research, but also talking to people, also public outreach and getting the public's perspective, drawing on oral history. And so, you know, it's taken its roots recently from that perspective, from just about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. So how did you go about assembling your team? This, again, as you said, this has been long in people's minds, and so you finally decide to realize this project. How did you conceive of the team?
Well, the researchers, myself, Michael Martin, Megan Smith, who's here today, but also Ray Brasseur, who's an associate professor, he's a research affiliate, and also Whitney Broussard, both at UL Lafayette. They were people that I was aware of and had come to know already, and I knew they would be interested in this project and would have something to contribute. The project itself was really put together by the members of the steering committee. I mean, I was a bit skeptical that we would ever get anything off the ground, and a year ago this May, I had given a talk at Vermilionville and suggested maybe strongly that, you know, that if we don't know where this group of Acadians, this first group of Acadians settled in a place that would come to be known as Acadiana, if we don't know where these locations are, if we don't know where New Acadia was founded, then do we really know that much about ourselves and about Acadiana or about Cajun culture that it needs to be done? And in so many words, basically said, it's a worthwhile project. People have been talking about it for decades. We should do it. We should put it together. After my talk, I don't know why I was surprised, but I was told that we're going to do it, that the steering committee formed in the following weeks and began the work of fundraising because we all have other jobs and other responsibilities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it takes funding. It takes support to put a research project like this together, a project that we think will be a multi-year project.
Well, what you said must have really touched them and really spurred them on to this. Now, Alan Broussard, who is the only one of us who still retains one of those names, what was it that really, again, aside from you being related to the Broussards, what was it that Mark proposed that really inspired you? You are the vice president of the steering committee. What got you involved?
Well, it goes back much longer than that. And here's if you recognize the format of that photograph, it's a swinger. So this is 1966 when Bona Arsenault came down and did his film. And he wrote the book, History of the Acadians, here, and Bona. Bona, you know, as a 12-year-old, I'm like, you know, what's this all about? You know, why is this guy coming all the way from Quebec, you know? And then, of course, I want to see Beausoleil's grave, you know, and I want to visit the site, you know, and I'm very quickly told there's no such place because we don't know where it is, you know, and so, you know, it's burning inside of me for a long time. and you know, when you made the presentation to us at Vermilionville that day, myself and a lot of the steering committee were there for the presentation. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like, we have to do this, you know, really have to do this. And it didn't take very long. And Warren hosted the first meeting at his house. And we just been Vermilionville has been very gracious to the committee, by the way, and hosting our monthly meetings now, you know, and we're meeting regularly. We're getting good donations, you know. But no, it's to me, it's the other thing is having traveled to this place in Newfoundland, which is a colony of Avalon, and seeing what this archaeological project that's been going on for 20 years has done, and it's in a very remote location. We're here in Lorville. We can, for cultural tourism, you know, hopefully this thing eventually becomes a museum and, you know, there for Lorville and so forth and so on. Judith, you know, it's incredible to know what this can develop into. This place can only be visited in the summertime. We could be visited year round, you know, I think something we spoke about a little bit earlier, I'm going to bring this out because it's significant in the fact that why would people be interested in this? In 2007, one of our Famille Beausoleil genealogists did a study, and in his study, he ran this through a genealogy computer program. 25% of the U.S. population has some link to Acadian heritage. And I called the guy yesterday and asked him, I said, can I quote that? He said, sure, 2007, this was true. You know, and he belongs to this group, association of genealogists. So I'm sure this is going to be controversial just by
Well, I mean, but people do make all kinds of claims. I've always loved the Van Morrison line, we're all from Denmark. So I guess at some point we can start saying we're all from Akkadi. your fascination and passion didn't just come from, and I'm sure Mark was very eloquent that evening, but you have been thinking about this for a long time, since you were very, very young.
And held many, many conversations with mm-hmm. many people, including, you know, Elmo Morgan, for one. Mm-hmm. Elmo had actually gone with a group, you know, looking for the burial place mm-hmm. more than once, and spent quite a bit of time actually doing this, you know, mm-hmm. so definitely. So, you know, that.
Well, and among other mm-hmm. misconceptions we were saying a little bit earlier, I think many of us have the sense that, well, maybe these early Acadians are just buried in graveyards around here. And I think we don't remember what a wilderness it was. And even the graveyards in St. Martinville weren't there when the Acadians first came. So I think that's worth describing, too. What was it like here? They didn't just come and there was a village. Maybe one of you could address that. What was it like in 1765 when they first came up the Têche?
Well, it's hard to know. I think it was Glenn Conrad who had done a study on the roads, and certainly the highway leading to Lorville was not there. It wasn't there until the 19th century. And so the bayou was important for transportation, likely, but also portages between bayous, probably even more so, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. A lot of the waterways were not cleared. It was a different landscape, but much of it is actually the same, surprisingly.
The landscape, but not the towns or...
Right. Well, you could say the cultural landscape was remarkably different, the buildings and the built environment. But I think the environment itself, when we talk about the Têche Ridge, much of the Têche Ridge, and luckily, I mean, Lorville and surroundings have changed relatively little in comparison to other towns in Acadiana over the last 100, 200 years. And that's one advantage, although that is changing. There's a lot of development in New Iberia mm-hmm. and along the Têche.
And then that's why it's so important that we act now, because this is changing very quickly every year. One of my coworkers at the office, who also happens to be a Broussard, you know, this morning he and I were visiting on this, and you know, he said he's from, you know, the area, and he's like, oh man, he said, had we done this just 50 years ago, what a difference it would have made, you know, and so It's very important that we act on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said something that I think, and you must have had this experience when you talk about Beausoleil Broussard, the two Broussard brothers. It has an emotional appeal to a lot of people from here who are connected to the Cadians. And you said someone came looking for the grave of Beausoleil Broussard and that there was none to be found. Mm-hmm. Well, speak to that sense of the mythology of the Beausoleil Broussards. What does that mean to a lot of people that you've encountered? Maybe Michael, I don't know, you're the historian.
And this, to be honest, isn't something that I've thought a whole lot on, but it seems to me that in any culture you need some form of founding mythology. And for the Acadians, the Grand Erasmus is clearly that, at least for the Acadians that are here. But along with that narrative, there have to be heroes. And I think that once historians came to understand the significance of Beausoleil Broussard, that he kind of took on that character. And then the other thing that you need with a mythology are places of visitation. And that's the thing that's lacking here. We can't – you can go to Spain and go to Christopher Columbus's grave, or you can go mm-hmm. to Paris and go to Napoleon's grave and that sort of thing. You can't do that here. And while that's true of a lot of Acadians and a lot of other people from this area who come in about the same time, I think because of this kind of ongoing and still growing interest in Acadian and Cajun culture, that it's kind of time for that to be the case, for us to either find out once and for all if it's there or to create some other form of memorial, of a sort.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Dr. Reese's comment a while ago about the New Acadia Project name, when you hear New Acadia Project now, you think, oh, new project, But the name, as he mentioned from Dr. Brasseur's book, I'm going to read directly from the book. Indeed, it is no coincidence that Father Jean-Francois, who accompanied the Halifax Acadians to the Attaquapaws, christened the post New Acadia. So that's when Dr. Reese said he took the name from Dr. Brasseur's book, what he was referring to. So
it's a very old reference.
So we were raising the question,
mm-hmm.
where is New Acadia?
Where is it? Where did they think of that? And tell us just historically a little bit about Beausoleil Broussard, so that people who don't know much about his history. Again, it wasn't the effect of the British just showed up one day and said, out of your houses, leave. That wasn't why he looms so large in people's minds. What did he do? What was it about his mythology? Anyone?
Well, I think Michael made a good point, and that is that during his lifetime, he probably did not have the reputation that he has today. That we look now on him quite differently. He's been called a freedom fighter, a resistance fighter, a leader. He was certainly many things. I mean, he did pay for the passage for people who couldn't afford it in his group, and he was one of a leader of many families. And so, it is tempting to think of that one individual, and it would be wonderful to be able to locate an unmarked burial and somehow associate that with an individual. But I don't think we have to – the project doesn't hinge on that. It doesn't rely on that. I think we are looking for, in general, the settlement of New Acadia and the numerous burials that are associated with it. And I think that's important. One important question that Ray Brasseur asked me when I told him we were actually getting funding for this and it seemed like it was going to take off, he said, well, one of the most important questions is why don't we know where – Joseph Broussard's burial is located. Why haven't we, why don't we know that? Why was it forgotten? Why were these places forgotten? And I think part of the answer is that we think differently on the past today than people did 50 years ago or certainly 100 years ago. And today it's, the interest in heritage, certainly the interest in our ancestors, the association with Acadiana and Cajun identity, which you really don't have to be Cajun or of Acadian descent to revel in if you mm-hmm. ever go to a Cajun field when the Raging Cajuns come out. I mean, there is a certain point where really, I think it's been said by folklorists, you can become an honorary Cajun, if you live here not that
mm-hmm.
long
mm-hmm.
and revel in the culture.
Yeah. And maybe one this is a question I need to ask Carl Brasso, but maybe one of you knows, and I've quoted this before when some of you have been on the program, that the Spanish governor wrote a letter back to Spain. Carl translated this. And I think the sentence was, "I would rather face an army than six Acadian families." That it wasn't just Beausoleil Broussard, but there was something in the determination of these people that struck them even at that moment, that every time I say that to people, they smile and go, yeah, that still exists. Somehow that spirit still seems to exist.
That's what the quote, you know, I mean, is about too, him naming it New Acadie. And as they settled, and we do know this much, they settled on the same site, type of format they were settled on up in Nova Scotia, despite the fact that they were trying to be corralled into a village. They fought it. And they said, no, I want my place, and I want my place out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And they kept moving out. And mm-hmm. It's incredible because within a year, they were as far as what was Côte-Gilet, within the first year already, mm-hmm. the movement was happening.
Determination.
I call it a little bit of tête d'œuf, and that means hard head.
I'm sure
for
the
those
Spanish governor would agree with you there. Well, let's talk about the project and how it is playing out right now. If you are just tuning in, my guests this afternoon are working on the New Acadia Project. The principal investigator is Dr. Mark Reese. He is an archaeologist and professor of anthropology here at UL Lafayette. Dr. Michael Martin, director of the Center for Louisiana Studies and a research affiliate with the project. Megan Smith, who we haven't heard from just yet, she is a graduate assistant working on this project. And Alan Broussard is vice chairman of the New Acadia Project Steering Committee. This project you've been working on it for about a year now. You've gotten the steering committee together. You've gotten research fellows, graduate students, and it is in motion right now. Where do you start? Where did you start with this? Did you start with the historians who had the records of where this place could be? Did you just start digging? Where was the beginning of the
Well, project? The much of the historical research had been done, or I should say, enough historical research had been done to pinpoint a general area between St. Martinville and New Iberia, around the vicinity of Lauraville. To get us started, we began with some work by Adam Ducey, who actually
does a program on KRVS.
Does a program mm-hmm. here, right, where he, as part of a class, went out and talked with local residents and asked them about the genealogy and history and landscape use around Lauraville and about these settlements, but especially about old burial grounds, family burial grounds, and abandoned cemeteries. With the idea that perhaps that might lead us to the unmarked burials of the 18th century of the 1765 settlement. It's a possibility, or a hypothesis, you know. So that had been done about 6 months ago. That had been going on. And we're going to need to continue speaking with people and doing oral history, and we're certainly going to need to ramp up the historical background, the archival research, because while we have the general outline, the framework of a history, all of the documents need to be gone through and looked at specifically with the kinds of questions that we have. You know, where were people? Where were they living? Especially, where might they have been buried? So there might be a passing reference, you know, so-and-so's property near the old Acadian burial ground. I mean, that would be delightful to mm-hmm. find something like that in an old record that hadn't been seen before. Someone may have read that and just dismissed it decades ago.
Oh, my grandfather always said, watch out, or Beausoleil's ghost is going to get you over
right,
that
right.
group of trees.
Right. And then a lot of the publicity that we've gotten, and we've enjoyed some amount of publicity on the on television, and newspaper, and now radio to get the word out, really began a lot, and also with Facebook. We have a Facebook page. With Megan Smith and Christian Schumacher, who about 8 weeks ago started the what I like to call the archaeological expedition, the first summer expedition, which has involved the archaeology of the systematic methodical surveying of sites of interest or areas of interest. Not excavation in the typical sense or what people think of in terms of archaeology, a large excavation. Not that, but some hard work out in the sun.
Well, let's define those areas of interest. These are the places that through records, whatever records there were, that people have decided that this is where the camps might have been, those initial places that the Acadians came, Megan?
Well, for a lot of these areas, what we're going off of is the oral histories that have been taken. So a lot of people have like family lore or local lore that says, oh, this many people were buried in this area, more than likely due to yellow fever or something. So what we're doing is we're systematically checking these areas to see if there are any anomalies, any things that might look as if they are a burial ground or, you know, any kind of campsite.
But now, what would those anomalies be to a trained eye?
Well, what we have been using is some equipment which helps us look into the ground to find these anomalies, which would be just kind of a dark spot, really. What it does is it measures the magnetic area under the ground, and it'll show if there has been disturbance. So it could be anything, and mostly what we found are buried pipes. But what we're doing
– the buried pipe anomaly.
But it is important because we're at least finding that it's not there. Mm-hmm. So we can continuously move on and hopefully find some more interesting things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just talking about that, I think that gives those of us who are lay people or not archaeologists, but we all are so impatient. But, you know, we've all read the National Geographic articles that say 20 years later, this little thing was discovered, right. You know, in this dig. And so there's a lot of patience involved in being
an
archaeologist.
In terms of time, anytime I get the feeling of, you know, the rain is cleared, time to rush out there to Lauraville and try to get some work done, mm-hmm. I just reflect on the fact that it's been 250 years as of next year. 250 years will be next year, yeah, of the arrival of the Acadians. And so we've made a start, but it's been 250 years. And so it's going to take
a lot of anomalies.
It's going to take some time. So it's going to take some time.
So tell us, I mean, and again, just through the eyes, what is your major? Are you doing your graduate studies now?
I am. Yes. Well, I will be starting officially in the mm-hmm. fall with okay. my classes in the public history program.
An amazing program here at the university.
Yes.
And we've spoken with so many of the students in these programs who are doing a variety of things in our state. So you're going to continue working on this project mm-hmm. as a part of your degree. So how do you see what is your plan? What's been happening this summer? Mark mentioned that for the past 8 weeks, you and Christian have been working out there. What have you been doing? Describe a day.
Well, a typical day starts off with us getting all of our equipment. You might see us walking across St. Mary with a lot of shovels and screens in our hands. And what we do is we load up the car and go out there. We basically have an idea of where we're going to start off the day. And we pick a piece of property that we definitely have permission to go onto. And then we start looking for anything that could be from the time period that we are looking for. And this could be anything from ceramics, from really small brick fragments, ferrous metal pieces, anything, really. and it's really difficult. So we do most of the time just dig holes in the ground, and they are typically about 30 centimeters wide and anywhere from 30 to 50 to 60 centimeters deep. And what we do is we kind of do a soil sample, which can tell us the stratigraphy or the different levels of the soil types to see if there has been a specific kind of disturbance in the area. And if there's any artifacts, we collect them. And we, you know, draw out maps and take extensive notes just in case we need to go back.
Do you do on site or in a laboratory any kind of dating procedure on the materials?
We haven't gotten to that point yet.
Okay. Well, and this is very important to our discussion here. And I know Mark really would like people to get a sense of this. Because when you think of a project, you think, oh, well, get students out there. They can just dig and find things. Well, that doesn't sound so expensive, does it? But when I asked you that question, obviously that takes it to another level, doesn't it? That's beyond just the shovels and spreading things out on a cloth.
Right.
So it quickly becomes a lot more complex.
It does. And we do use the rain days to our advantage. Mm-hmm. Whenever we are in the lab, we are able to clean off artifacts, scan in the maps that we've done, make more maps, or just write down any information possible, look for new places that we could go to. So we do as much as we can with mm-hmm. the time we're allotted.
And so the places that you all are looking at right now, you've decided to search there because you have heard people speak of, through the oral histories you've done, that this could possibly be a graveyard. But you're asking these people in areas that have been determined to have been some near close to the original camps? I think some people may be interested in...
Well, we don't really know where the original camps were.
They didn't leave
certainly.
A map.
Mm-hmm. And our clues are various. One is going on the assumption that we're in the right area of the Teche Ridge, off of the Bayou Teche. It's an enormous area. We also have the Spanish land patents. So we have from the 1770s, so right after, a few years later. And so we have the Spanish land patents, which give locational information. As I had mentioned, there are a few old burial grounds, family burial grounds, many of which are abandoned today. There are also, as Megan mentioned, reports of burials that are unmarked, purported burial grounds, and those can be investigated as well. But the abandoned cemeteries has been sort of at least a stake in the ground or a flag that we can start at some location. That if there's a burial that dates from the mid-19th century, from the 1860s, well, we're only 100 years away then. Mm-hmm. We've made it mm-hmm. all the way back to the 1860s. And so the possibility that there are earlier burials around there, especially if the individuals are related, if they are the descendants of the people we're looking for.
Right, because we do know Acadians like to live right next door to their parents.
Well, it's something at least to start with. Yeah. It's something mm-hmm. to go on.
Right. Now, they did quickly expand out, though. After you talk about the Spanish patents in the 1770s. There was a period where you do believe that they sort of stayed in a group, and then they started quickly, I guess, going out further, and you know, if they were ranching or farming, they needed more property. So you're looking at that very, very early period before.
Absolutely, the first few nights. The first few nights, weeks, months. The poet Daryl Bourke wrote eloquently on Joseph Beausoleil Broussard's last night mm-hmm. along the Bayou Teche, and I recommend that. Megan's Guitar, that book, to anyone. It gets your mind going and it gets you thinking. I don't think that with the purported epidemic, which Carl Bresso had written about as possibly one reason why people left, I don't know that everyone abandoned the area. We just don't know that. We don't know what kind of dwellings they built for the first few nights, first few weeks. I suspect, based on the 1770s patents, that many people stayed, the subsequent generations, and some people moved out and they established other settlements quickly. That is true, but those earlier places were not abandoned. I just mm-hmm. can't imagine that. I can't imagine people abandoning places where their parents and grandparents were mm-hmm. buried. And we know that, according to the patents, that people continued to claim the land in that area.
Right. So the first few nights, we want objects for it. And they brought everything. That's all they had in the world, what they brought with them to that area, to those camps. So, Megan, is it just you and Christian right now who are working out in the field?
Yes.
Now, the rest of you have been out to the space where Megan and Christian have been working. Have you walked those grounds yet, Alan?
I have not walked the grounds, but I've visited the general area, definitely.
Mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm. How do you feel? What are your ancestors' names from that group? Who are you related to?
Well, I'm related through my mother's side to both Alexandre and Beausoleil.
Right, we're all cousins in this room, all of us, yes. how, does it make you feel working on this project?
Oh, it's great. And mm-hmm. it gives me another subject to talk to my family about. They're all excited.
Well, have you read Daryl's book of poems that Mark mentioned?
I have not.
Megan's Guitar is even named after you.
That's a must read. Yeah.
But I do recommend that. I know when Daryl was in here talking about that book, he was reading one of the poems. And there was a moment which, and he's related to those people as well. We both couldn't speak for just a moment because it was so real. The feelings
the same experience
that
too,
he's
actually a member of our steering committee. Also, Daryl is. Yeah.
How perfect! Yeah. But making it more than just a name in a history book, it made them very real people with emotions and connections, family connections.
I think the project has that so strongly that it tugs on the emotional cords. Whether you're a descendant or whether you would identify or associate with Cajun culture today and want some sort of historical depth. It also has the intellectual, though. It also has a propensity to captivate people from anywhere in the world who happen to be interested in history or settlement or colonialism or that period, the 18th century, Atlantic history, the world history. I mean, there are many topics that would interest scholars or anyone interested in history. So it has the intellectual aspect. And then on top of that, or maybe at the base, at the foundation, is the economic aspect. And that is that people often think that culture is something that is extra or culture might be frivolous to economic development. I think it's pretty clear if you do any digging around that it's actually the opposite, that the economy is founded on culture. That the economic development happens within cultures. And so the potential for the development of the cultural economy is very clear.
Well, and I think people remember not just too long ago, Poverty Point was declared World Heritage Site. And obviously the renown that brings this area and the potential for people coming to visit there, even without that emotional pull. And one can only imagine with this emotional pull what it would bring to this area. If you are just tuning in, we are talking about the New Acadia Project, Le Projet Nouvelle Acadie. My guests are a part of this project. Dr. Mark Rees is the principal investigator. Dr. Michael Martin is director of the Center for Louisiana Studies. Megan Smith is the graduate student who is about to start her master's degree in public history here at UL Lafayette. Alan Broussard is on the steering committee, vice chair of the steering committee for the New Acadia Project, all of us with our connections to these people, and whether it is the emotional, the intellectual, the historical that pulls us to this project, there are so many reasons to draw us to the project. So you're going to be starting on your degree. You mentioned another student, Christian, who is working with it. Mm-hmm. Now, just before we started the interview, I was asking how the Center for Louisiana Studies will become involved further with this project, and you did mention perhaps another graduate student and how will the Center for Louisiana Studies interact with this project?
Well, partly what we'll do is oversee the graduate assistantship because I'm a faculty member in history and also I do public history. I'm able to oversee master's students' work in those fields. And so Megan and I will be working quite closely as she kind of shifts from being in the outside world over into being in the quiet, sometimes gloomy archival world. It's also an exciting place to be, though.
I'm ready.
Yes.
That's right.
So there are no rain days in the archives. But what she'll be doing at that point, and I'll be overseeing, is this work looking for original documents. Most of it, we already know, is going to be either a governmental, as I said earlier, or a church record. The likelihood of finding letters or diaries from these people is pretty slim.
But not impossible.
Not impossible, I suppose. But we'll not get our hopes up on that mm-hmm. on that end. Mm-hmm. But there's always the possibility that there are new records. I mean, in New Orleans right now, the State Museum and a couple of other entities over there are bringing out new colonial documents every day and digitizing them. So there's the possibility that there is some treasure trove of materials that we just haven't discovered yet. So that may be something that happens.
And that is the work that takes place in archives and record places. And so you'll be working on that. Now, just the physical part, which you're very involved with this summer, how will that progress? And again, your face when I asked about how are you dating this, and Mark may want to speak to this as well, because you mentioned fundraising in the beginning, and this is a big part of this project as it grows, and you as well, Alan, on the steering committee know that. What is your projection for the need for the fundraising? What kinds of equipment? What other things will you need for this project, you know, in addition to just being in the archives? What's necessary for this project to continue into the future?
Right. Well, you know, we call it a project, and so people might immediately think, wow, there's this team of researchers. And mm-hmm, so we're mm-hmm. – well, it's important to remember that we all have full-time jobs or other things that we're doing alongside this. And so Megan and Christian have been a crew of two people out in an area that is at least a 10-mile length of the Teche Ridge, I think probably more, moving relatively slowly, searching. People have said a needle in a haystack, or I've said a button in a sugarcane field maybe. And so it's a lot of work, and it's a small group, I think. If a site is identified, there's a potential for volunteers. At this point, though, it's really not helpful to have a lot of people who are volunteers. And I think a lot of the work is what we might call, for lack of a better word, drudgery of methodically going through the soil or methodically going through the archives day after day, looking for some clue or something to go on. The possibility of dating items that you had mentioned is really not in archaeology. Radiocarbon dating or other dating techniques can be very expensive. But in this case, we wouldn't be using radiocarbon dating likely for an 18th century site, but simply the artifacts that would be found. The different kinds of artifacts, classes of artifacts, especially ceramics, other artifacts, but especially ceramics, which can give us a time frame down to a decade or so would be one way we could increase the investigation or focus an investigation on a site if we were finding artifacts from the right time period. The need for funding really has to do with supporting researchers, and these researchers are primarily right now students who I've heard need to eat, and I've heard need places to live, and I've heard they charge tuition at universities. Uh-huh. And so there are those costs associated with that to support students who are on the project doing research. We'd like to increase the numbers of students who are supported on the project with a stipend, as well as equipment and travel supplies travel expenses. And so we're using personal vehicles, but those need gasoline. There's all sorts of other kinds of equipment that we would like to have. And we're not just talking about shovels, which I've found out do break. we had one. But other equipment, remote sensing equipment. We have a cesium magnetometer, which Megan and Christian have been using. And it works fairly well. We would like to broaden that, especially in the event that we do find a site that we want to investigate more thoroughly. It would be nice to have additional equipment that we can compare with to do electromagnetic resistivity or perhaps ground-penetrating radar. Those are different kinds of techniques. Some are better than others for this kind of soil. But we really don't have the broad capacity that we would like to have. And as you can imagine, that costs some money as well. Mm-hmm. And we are talking about a multi-year project. It's not going to be accomplished in months or even 1 year. It's, you know, we have said just to get started, just to sort of put a dent in the subject, we would do a 2-year project. But for that 2 years, the crew is in the field 8 weeks for 2 summers and then 4 weeks in the winter. So all told, we're not talking about that much time in terms of archaeology, in terms of archaeological survey. That is very brief. Out of those 2 years, the remainder of the time spent doing archival, historical research, oral history, and the other research that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2 years, I mean, again, if you ever read about archaeological projects and digs, that is such a short time that you describe. And even if you do find something promising, so much research and discovery still needs to be done in addition to that. You may not have that overwhelming eureka moment in
right.
2 years.
And I guess to put it in perspective, what we have covered so far of the 10 miles along the Tesh is about a half a mile. And that's just a small area. But luckily, just with the two people, we have experience, you know, under our belts. But it will take a while.
And you don't look tanned at all. You've been out in the, of course, it has been cloudy a lot. And so, Mark, you look like you wanted to add something to that.
Well, I was kind of leading up to the discussion of the cost and the need for support, because honestly, we would never have gotten started. We would have never been able to get two students together and fund the project if it weren't for the steering committee and the monies they have raised. And so that's supported us for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we could use additional personnel, additional equipment, and we would like to continue. We plan to succeed, by the way. And so in order to succeed, it's going to have to continue. Mm-hmm. And so people who are interested in supporting us could contact the project through Facebook, or they can go directly to the Acadian Museum website. The Acadian Museum in Erath has a website, acadianmuseum.com. And we have partnered with the Acadian Heritage and Culture Foundation, which is a nonprofit out of the Acadian Museum. And they, the nonprofit Acadian Heritage and Culture Foundation, are, as part of the partnership, are raising money, which is being made available to the project in order to get this work done.
And you know, to add on that, Judith, a significant portion of our money so far has come from individual donors, as you can imagine, being associated with KRVS, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know. So this come from individual donors, and small contributions are very welcome. And as we
Every Broussard and Thibodeau.
I'm going to say, you know, I mean, just a quick list. Thibodeau, Boudreau, Mouton, Toup, Baudouin, Dugabreau, Trohan, Blanchette, Leblanc, Dupré, Longlenay. These, I just went through a very quick list there, but I mean –
Were they all in this original group, those names?
These were not all in the original group, but these are all, looking into it the last few days, you know, these mm-hmm. family names I name mm-hmm. are linked back to these original families. And, just you know, we had to marry someone, you know, back in those days. You know, so we're all related, as you mentioned mm-hmm. several mm-hmm. times. The other thing that I want to make sure we mention is to thank the people from Lauraville who are possibly listening in this afternoon for their cooperation, because they've been tremendous, tremendous in helping us get started there. The spirit in the community is incredible, you know, and we really, really appreciate the help that we're getting from the people of Lauraville.
So they've been giving a number of these oral histories that you're talking about and information about possible burial grounds and just
stories. And also
stories.
Allowing us to go onto their land and to do the study, because we are working on privately owned property.
And mm-hmm. financial contributions, and also the tourism committee from New Iberia Parish, you know, has been very supportive. And the community, I call it the council, the New mm-hmm. Iberia Parish Council, mm-hmm. has been extremely supportive. I'm not going to mention any numbers here, but they've been extremely supportive of us. And it's very good to see this coming through like this.
And for us in the field as well. They've been very, very, very friendly.
Well, we're talking about the new Acadia project. If you're just turning your radio on right now, you can find out more about it through their Facebook page, which they've mentioned, and just look for New Acadia Project. You can type that in. There's contact information. If you would like to find out more about helping out, supporting this project, you can contact people through the Facebook page or through the Acadian Museum, I believe. That's a good point as well. And just to find out more about this fabulous project, and if you whether you're related or it just thrills you to think that this history might just become clearer and sharper in focus. That's an amazing thing, because we don't have a center. And, you know, there's the statue of Evangeline, obviously, in St. Martinville. But It's from a poem. It's not, you know, it's it that has touched people for generations. But we, okay, Mark is looking. is someone related to Evangeline here?
Well, as many people know or might not know, mm-hmm. the statue is in the likeness of Dolores Del Rio, who played Evangeline.
And in the
she,
movie.
I've read that she paid for the statue as well. So,
and what a lovely
is it Evangeline
testament.
Or yeah.
Dolores.
Is it Dolores Del Rio who played Evangeline in a movie?
And going back to the myth of Beausoleil, you know, mm-hmm. you're talking about the myth of the whole story, you know, and I mean the myth of Evangeline, you know, and you know to figure that the Grand Arrangement was in help me out here, the 1755, but Beausoleil arrives in 1765. Where was he these 10 years? Well, it's well documented. You asked a lot about him, you know. It's well documented. It's been well written on, and you know, he was as Dr. Reese mentioned earlier, considered to be a freedom fighter now, but he was hiding in the bush basically and carrying on guerrilla warfare. So the legend's there, but there's also a lot of history that we're uncovering slowly about him. One thing talking about myth, you know, one guy got me very excited one time as a child, telling me, and might have been one of these gentlemen, in fact. There was 28 notches on his gun, you know. Where this came from, I have no idea, but one of these historians told me this one time, you know,
so
I don't know where it came
from. So late at night when the Broussards gather around the campfire, they tell stories like this, notches on the gun. But, you know, I'm sure some people listening would love to go to a history, what you're talking about right now. Michael, can you recommend a really basic, good history about this time period that we're talking about? We've mentioned Carl Brasso.
That's the one I would mention.
Is that the one? Okay, well.
I mean, that's kind of the standard for all other histories of this time period.
Give us the title again.
It's called The Founding of New Acadia, and happily someone brought a copy of it, so I can read the subtitle. The Beginnings of Acadian Life in Louisiana. Covers the period 1765 to 1803. I mean, Brasso is the founder of Acadian history in Louisiana. And he's by far the preeminent scholar of Acadians in Louisiana. And so if you're going to start somewhere, it should be with Carl Brasso.
So that's a great book to purchase and keep with you if you're interested in this history and would like to follow along as the NAP gathers steam and continues the new Acadia project. So great book to get if you'd like to really get the basics of this history. And, of course, as you said, new things are being discovered in the archives, the drudgery of the researchers. And I do remember several years ago interviewing a man who had written a book, and you may remember this book. It's about the reports, the newspaper reports at the time of the expulsion of the Acadians that were being printed in newspapers in the Northeast. That they were intensely aware, because this was before the Revolution, but I mean, it was quite populated up there, and it was a Catholic colony. It was some very strong reactions to the Acadians, who they all knew were there, and some very emotional responses at the time of what we're talking about happened. This may not have been very populated here or settled, but very strong reactions about the Acadian expulsions, not wanting them in their territory, not wanting the Acadians to show up in Georgia or Philadelphia, or kind of mirrors, I guess, some things happening now too. But so that was a very interesting book because he was in the archives looking for newspaper accounts of that time, people writing letters of what they had heard about what's happening in Nova Scotia. Anyway, we can talk about that one afterwards. But so, yes, there's all kinds of angles that could be discovered about this time period and flesh this out. So you are looking for people to be interested in the project, to help support the project right now. I know that you're going to be having some public discussion times, or you're going to be presenting the information. I think I have these here, and libraries coming up. I think
it is on the Facebook page.
Facebook page.
The upcoming presentations.
Okay, and who will be there at these presentations? Will you be presenting, Alan, Megan? Okay, what will you be talking about? What will you show people at these presentations?
Well, I'll have a nice PowerPoint that mm-hmm. I will be showing. I'll basically be showing photos of field work that we've been doing, some photos of some of the areas that we have been working at, and basically explain what we have been doing in the field. So it'll be kind of basically what we've been talking about now, just So a lot of more people can find
out. And with some images as well.
Yes.
Okay. So if you are in the vicinity on August 2nd, you can go to the Lafayette South Regional Library. Megan Smith will be there. Will Christian be with you as well? The other
more
student?
Than likely, yes.
Okay. You'll be presenting the information that you've gathered so far, and you'll have photographs as well at the Crowley Public Library on August 9th, and then at the Acadian Memorial in St. Martinville on August 15th.
Yes.
So three opportunities coming up where you can learn more about the project, see what you've done so far, and perhaps get involved as well. You'll have contact information at those three presentations.
And the running joke in archaeology is that the last week is always when you find the thing you're looking for. So
that's
hopefully,
right.
Hopefully next week we'll find something.
They're going to make an effort on that too in the last week.
Well, we'll look forward to having you all back. We're out of time right now. Dr. Mark Reese, Dr. Michael Martin, Megan Smith, and Alan Broussard, all involved in the New Acadia Project. Their Facebook page is New Acadia Project. You can check that out for more information or attend one of the presentations coming up soon. Thank you all for this fascinating research, and we look forward to it unfolding over the years. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks.
It's 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, listener-supported public radio for Acadiana.